Chapter 10. Something impacted on Eddie's front hard shield with enough force to distort her optical feeds. The shock reverberated through Blake's skull, shaking her so hard her teeth hurt, and she felt the feedback needling through her jack. Shit, what was that? She twisted both her control sticks on their horizontal axis, bringing Eddie into hold-down mode. The huge machine hunkered down behind its heavy leg armor, and her feed cleared to display an enemy heavy. Its legs were like hers, but that's where the similarities ended. The upper body seemed to be made out of an old truck chassis that had been welded to the waist gimbal and up-armored with sheet steel. Damn junkers! Where are the Separatists getting all this gear? It had a 105mm gun rigged to the side of the haphazard torso, which boomed as it strode forward, causing her shields to flare once more. Blake looked across and eyed her hard shield power readout. Not good. She could only take maybe one more of those before she was down to armor plating, and that wouldn't do. She opened a channel as the enemy heavy opened up with its 12.7mm turret MG, high-caliber rounds splashing against her depleting shields, rippling across its surface like stones thrown into a pond. She responded by triggering her bully beam and played it across the mech's torso, hoping to toast some optics or something. Paint bubbled upon the heavy welded steel, and the machine juddered as the kinetic beam did its work, but the enemy junker just pushed on like a man walking against the wind and continued its advance. Contact heavy! 500 yards, my axis! We've got nothing that can scratch that, boss, came Mirante's instant reply. You don't. All call signs, peel past Eddie and proceed with a plan. Use me for cover.
Roger that, from Kronig.
Yeah, boss, Mirante. Another 105mm shell hammered into Eddie, and her shields blew with a supersonic pop that shattered the few windows that had somehow remained intact on the upper levels of the nearest habitation blocks. She waited agonizing seconds, staring hard at the approaching mech as it closed the distance. She cancelled the incessant beeping of her shield alarm and waited, focusing hard on her breathing. Blake shot a glance at her rear display, caught grainy images of Mogs hightailing it past at a speed she didn't know they could manage.
Hurry up, dammit! Last man across, boss, reported Kronig, and instantly Blake was driving forward, powerful servos pushing Eddie to its feet in a whine of grinding metal.
The enemy mech fired again.
Spread out, spread out!
Kronig barked, his voice crackling with distortion in Kinney's ears.
Ignore the infantry, concentrate on the Mogs first!
Kinney was left of the line, so halted and knelt in the mud, waiting for the rest of his squad to get into place. He looked left and saw Captain Blake barreling into the enemy heavy, bully laser blazing across its surface, causing its glacis plates to burst into flame. He understood, as his leader's machine charged with startling speed, why that particular class of heavy mech was named the Toro. They collided with a mighty boom, and the ground shook, worrying the dirt around Kinney's feet. They were outnumbered 2-1 by the enemy legs. There were nearly 24 of them, supported by 3 times as many infantry as they tried to take the wall of HQ's least defended side. They had the drop on the dismounts and the crappy Mogs that were attacking District HQ, so it would come down to speed and violence of action to take them out. A straight-up assault. Hey diddle diddle, straight up the middle, as the instructors at Mongoose School used to say. Kinney never thought he would be doing one in real life.
Listen in, Kronig said, positioning himself at the far right of first squad so he could maintain visual on second. Bounding cover by squads. Go flat out and surprise the bastards.
Mirante confirmed the orders, her voice cold. Markovic whooped with joy. Braga said something in the old tongue. Kronig invoked the protection of the saints.
First squad, move!
They were up and running at a flat sprint across open ground, while second squad poured the hate downrange. The soil was soft underfoot, churned up by a combination of ploughs and artillery shells, and the Mogs sunk a good 18 inches for every step taken. Despite this, they kept a good pace, with powerful strides that flung disrupted earth everywhere. Incoming fire was non-existent for the first bound, and Kinney puffed hard as he saw Tracer whip across no man's land. Mirante's squad bracketed and destroyed 2 enemy Mogs before they even managed to turn around, tracers finding backs, shoddily welded rear armor coming apart under the fire.
Huge chunks of vital mechanisms chipped from the chassis of the enemy engines until the machines were dead on their feet. It was impossible for First Squad to offer support fire. Kinney could barely see as he sprinted awkwardly. Such was the violence of the juddering motion caused by machines being driven beyond their usual limits.
"Down!"
came the shout, and he instantly dropped to one knee, momentum ploughing a small trench into the soil, and Kinney was firing before he had stopped. The enemy had begun to turn now, realizing the threat to their rear, their movements sluggish compared to the army machines. Kinney's gun spewed rounds in a non-stop firestorm. The first target juddered, caught mid-turn, and the unshielded, cobbled-together mech was quickly dispatched. Many of Reynolds' rounds bounced off, red phosphorescent beams of tracers winging wildly into the night sky, but some got through the joints and weak spots, smashing vital systems. Braga's fire found his own, and the enemy MOG came apart under the joint assault, much to his comrade's approval. Kinney worked his guns left to right, focusing from one target to another. He chopped down infantry as he strafed from MOG to MOG, the poor bugger's death simply a byproduct of machine warfare, and concentrated on his next victim. A flurry of rockets screamed from the friendly line, corkscrewing wildly across the muddy terrain before slamming into the enemy MOG, blowing it from its feet in a shower of shrapnel.
"Ha ha! That one was for Grayson, you prick!"
yelled Braga as Kronig's rockets did their damage. "He'll have a headache in the morning," huffed Markovich. A second squad sprinted past their position, aiming for the entrance to the skeleton frame greenhouses. Shots pinged and ricocheted from Kinney's armor now, as the enemy brought their guns to bear. They might not be equipped with shields, but neither was he anymore, and he figured that it would come down to who would get the most lead downrange in the shortest time. Like every straight assault, it would come down to attrition. Sporadic fire came from the HQ walls, causing several of the enemy MOGs to switch fire back again. Beams glittered and hard rounds stitched the earth as the suddenly outgunned Corvids became crippled with indecision. They must have been aware of their precarious position, trapped as they were between the wall and an unexpected attack from the rear. Kinney thought it would probably make them fight all the harder. As a third MOG caught fire under First Squad's assault and crumpled into an undignified heap, Kinney couldn't help but be reminded of Bader, and he pumped more and more rounds into the flaming torch of a vehicle. New fires echoed from the right, outgoing. He could tell by the disciplined bursts 100 yards up ahead, signalling that Second Squad were in position. Without requiring any prompting, the entirety of First Squad were on their feet again. Kinney eyed his ammo counters as he sprinted for all his worth towards the hydroponics buildings, arms trying to pump in the restrictive armoured gauntlets. He was unsure if he could manage any more prolonged bursts like that. The Junker Toro fired its main gun again at almost point-blank range. It was a wild shot, and the 105mm round just clipped Eddie's upper carapace, shearing the bully beam turret clean off with a screech of tortured metal. Blake used her momentum to launch a powerful thrust kick, and Eddie's right leg pistoned out with deadly intent. The enemy stepped back, anticipating the blow, causing it to fall short and scrape the Junker's leading leg. Eddie's armored foot scraped down the enemy's leg in a shower of sparks, causing Blake to lose her balance. She turned her mech stumble into a headbutt, smashing Eddie's carapace into the Corvid machine's cockpit. Welded steel was no match for composite armor, and the Separatist mech's visage crumpled with the strike. It fired again, the shot having no hope of finding its target, as Eddie was practically on top of the failing machine, the enemy's barrel looking over its shoulder. Blake's headbutt took the motion out of her fall, and she managed to find her footing again, stamping down on the enemy's injured leg, causing it to buckle at an angle. She felt triumphant as the lower leg sheared off completely, and the Junker fell, twisting as it did so. Its torso swung around, 105mm barrel barely clearing Eddie's carapace as the fall gave it space to line up one last shot. Blake was too close, too off balance to maneuver her bulky machine in any way that might save her, so simply stared into that smoking barrel for the longest split second, imagining how long it takes for an autoloader to complete its sequence. A shot cracked across her bow. Not the cannon, but the distinctive hypersonic boom of a railgun slug. The Junker mech was gutted from flank to flank, like somebody had fired a shotgun at a melon, and she followed the air distortion back to its source. She saw nothing. "You're my prey, boss, nobody else's," Armbruster. "Thanks for that, you prick," Blake retorted. She refused to be baited. Her pragmatic nature engaged fully, and she began to check systems. The shot that took out her turret did some damage to the power relays, causing a feedback surge to fry some of her lesser systems. If she didn't shut down now, it would cause permanent damage within the next couple of minutes, and the last thing she wanted was her engine blowing up without warning. Eddie would be sat still for a while as it reset and went through system startup routines, entirely in the open. She was entirely at Armbruster's mercy if he decided to attack. Her mech couldn't even find him, let alone shoot him with anything, lacking any weapons other than Eddie's considerable mass. So she decided to carry on with her plan, and if her former hunter shot her in the back, then so be it.
"Down!"
came the call, rather unnecessarily in Kinney's opinion. First squad had huffed and puffed their way through the smashed glass of the hydroponics facility and crashed into the first available cover after crossing no man's land. Kinney dropped into an irrigation ditch. An M841 was immediately plunged up to its knees in water. The ditches were uniformly spaced every 100 yards or so, and normally provided water to the crops that currently sat, mangled and chopped to pieces among the dirt. Unfortunately, the enemy had the same idea, and now the QRF platoon was engaged in a form of improvised trench warfare. Kinney stuck his guns over the trench lip and rattled off a short burst before ducking down. Great clods of soil were thrown up around him, splashing down alongside his shell casings in the dirty water. The private engaged his optic wipers, as water made it difficult to see, and blazed away at muzzle flashes.
"Mirante, Kronig, continue your advance. Break down into fire teams. Try to maintain the line."
"Roger," Mirante replied over rhythmic cannon fire. "Moving now." The nature of the trench system made it impractical for the squads to cover each other's advance, so Kronig had decided to move up in smaller teams.
"Kinney, Braga, you're Delta. Stay here and cover. Machado and Victoria, you're Charlie, with me."
"Roger," chorused the privates.
"Charlie, prepare to move."
Kronig got a good grip of the lip of the trench.
"Move!"
Braga and Kinney laced the field with fire, suppressing the enemy under a hail of tracer. Kronig and the others scrambled madly up the trench side, the soft earth providing little purchase for a heavy war machine, but were soon away at a mad dash, mirrored on the right flank by Mirante's squad. Kronig's D-99 and the Mogs jumped down into the next trench and immediately began laying down fire.
"Delta, move!"
Kinney and Braga flailed and scrabbled from the trench and set off at a good pace, keeping their spacing loose. Kinney had managed about 60 yards when an incoming cannon round from Saints Newware detonated to his left. A great plume of mud rose into the air and the blast buffeted him hard, knocking him to his knees mid-stride.
"Shit!"
he thought as he rose to one knee and pushed off. Servo screamed and nothing moved.
"Shit, shit, shit," he thought. "Not now."
M841's leg had jammed. Kinney grunted and strained. It always did it at the worst possible times. Veins bulged in his neck as his face went bright red. He felt like his head would explode from the effort. Something felt like it was starting to give.
"You okay?" Braga called.
The other Mog driver had stopped just short of the trench and was looking back. His body language looked worried.
"Why are you trying to kill me, you bastard?"
Kinney yelled, unsure whether he was transmitting or not. With a final whine of protest, the knee joint popped into motion, propelling him to his feet and into a run once again. Small arms fire peppered from his plating with worrying regularity, pinging and sparking with gusto as Kinney finally reached the trench and dropped into the water.
"What the hell happened?"
Kronig demanded. "Servo's locked up," Kinney replied, leg muscles burning from the effort. "I'm good." Kronig growled something before Charlie Fireteam moved off. The squad completed another bound without incident, chewing through precious ammo to gain ground. Kinney was unsure if he hit anything, but was painfully aware that his short pause had delayed the unit, costing time and ammunition they couldn't afford. Mirante's squad had to hold up for a short while for first squad to catch up,
but soon enough the line was firm and Kronig opened a channel.
Listen up! The enemy are in the next trench line. There's more of them, and we have practically no ammo, but they're pinned in place. We have to go through them to get to HQ.
Braga shuffled uncomfortably next to Kinney, the physical embodiment of how the young private felt about it.
Can't the base give us some support? Smack 'em from the rear? Marante inquired.
Kinney thought it sounded like a good idea.
They had to have more than the piddly support fire they were currently putting out. Just one cannon could solve all their problems for the near future.
Negative. They're in siege mode. They probably barely have enough troops to man the walls. Plus, they don't know if they can trust us yet, with army units going nuts all over the place.
He paused, as though reluctant to say the words himself.
The only option is hand-to-hand combat.
Mogs weren't built for hand-to-hand combat. In the past there had been modifications, saw blades and crushing claws, etc., but those were used in times of war. Today's Mogs are outfitted for urban pacification, primarily smoke bombs and small-caliber MGs for dealing with dismounts and light-armored targets. Fitting a power saw to a Mog would be breaking a dozen or more regulations these days. Kinney wondered if the Corvids cared about that.
We advance on my command, full charge. If anyone's got smoke, pop it on the approach. Save your ammo for the trench. Kinney, you're with me. You lock up again, I'll drag your ass myself.
The confirmations were half-hearted, not filled with confidence at all. Until the ground shook, then again and again. It was the rhythmic thumping of a heavy on the advance. Kinney turned to look, and a wash of relief swept over him.
Great leader compels you to die!
Captain Blake roared from external speakers as Eddie thundered up the center line of their advance.
Go now, Kronig said as he heaved himself from the trench and popped smoke.
The rest of the Mogs followed suit, sending a fusillade of canisters ahead of them, pitifully few, that popped just in front of the next trench line. The incoming fire was directed solely at Eddie as it rampaged through, chugging past the line to crash into depth positions like some out-of-control train. The commander obviously knew she couldn't get caught up in Mog business for fear of squashing her own men, and Kinney caught a glimpse of her through the smoke, stomping up and down the final trench line, flinging mangled machines and bodies left and right. The infantry in that trench fled for their lives, nowhere to go but the wall, where Kinney imagined they would be gunned down by its defenders. Then he was in the smoke, blind, tracers snapping past like supercharged fireflies, and he fell, straight on top of another Mog. He came down hard into the trench, and the Junker Mog disappeared under the water as his weight bore down upon it. Kinney opened up at point-blank range, rounds and casing kicking up some brown spume that splashed wildly. The flat report banged loudly as rapid fire chewed through shoddily fashioned armor and pulped the driver inside. The guns suddenly went silent, barrels steaming as water splashed against them, and Kinney's autoloaders whined on empty as he snarled, pushing himself from his kill. Dismounts, chest high in the murk, fired rifles at him ineffectually, faces contorted in screams that were lost to the gunfire. They couldn't move fast enough in the brown liquid, and Kinney ground forward, punching out, using his weapons barrels as improvised spears. The first two men were pole-axed off their feet, rib cages shattered despite body armor, and clattered into another of their number. Kinney didn't stop, and rifle rounds spattered from his armored hide, deforming and falling away as he strode on. He crushed the spluttering men under metal-shod feet, and continued to lash out in short punches, mashing flesh and breaking bones with every strike. Up ahead, Kronig fired a 25mm AP round into a Mog at point-blank range, obliterating the upper glacis of its cockpit and the upper torso of the driver inside. His gun clicked empty, so Kronig swung it vertical into the stowed position and grasped the dead Mog in an armoured gauntlet. Being a full foot taller than a Mog, D-99 had little trouble lifting the enemy machine from its feet. Kronig advanced like a legionnaire from Legend, hunched under a punishing fusillade behind his makeshift shield. He fired his single MG at another pair of enemy drivers, one of whom had extended his legs to shoot over his comrade's head. The 8mm gun had little effect and clattered empty after a short burst, but it had got Kronig close, and he rammed his shoulder forward, battering the lead Mog back. He dropped his shattered shield and allowed it to sink into the waterlogged floor of the trench, simultaneously firing a single rocket from his shoulder-mounted launcher. The HE round exploded, engulfing both machines in a short-lived ball of orange flame, but the force was directed at the enemy machine, which cannoned back into its brother, knocking him off his feet. Seemingly out of ammo, Kronig emergency ejected, launching his body from the machine. Kinney stopped, staring open-mouthed at the insanity as Kronig landed like a long jumper, skidding hard before he clambered across the destroyed Mogs, carbine in hand. He paused to mow down an infantryman that appeared with a short burst, before leaping onto the last machine that lay partially obscured by water, pinned by its fallen buddy. The driver fired wildly, twin MGs spraying into the air, but Kronig was well inside his arcs and remained unharmed as he found footing on the machine's carapace. "He's going to be deaf if he survives that," Kinney thought as Kronig ducked down, his face set in grim determination, upper body vanishing under the water. The enemy Mog's cockpit opened as Kronig reappeared, stepping back to avoid getting knocked into the water. "He's pulled the release cable." Sergeant Kronig calmly shot the enemy Mog driver in the face, then hurriedly returned to his own machine, balancing precariously on the wreckages of three leg units as he went. "My flank is clear," Braga reported as Kinney still stared past Kronig's D-99 at the destruction he had wrought in short order.
"Roger that," Kronig replied breathlessly. "We're clear here also. Second squad report."
"We're good here, no casualties," Marante reported in her usual clipped tone. "It would seem," Markovich added, "that their machines are held together with spit and happy thoughts."
"Indeed. Unlike ours that are held together with duct tape and string, praise Nara."
Surprisingly, it was Kronig that had fired back with a witticism of his own. It got a chorus of "Praise Nara!" from the platoon, and even Kinney had to smile. Eddie stood, battered but unbroken, in front of the eastern gate of District HQ. Blake's machine was a vision from the seventh hell, blackened and scarred, its feet covered in mashed body parts and mud. Kinney thought, in that moment of stillness after the combat, that Steady Ed was absolutely terrifying. "Attention!" she boomed, her loudspeaker still clearly operational. "We are soldiers from Sector 78, loyal to the NPA, and we are expected. Open the gate!" And just like that, the gate began to move, massive rollers shifting the iron monstrosity to one side, painfully slow.
"Kinney," Kronig said,
over a private channel that only the two of them could hear.
"Good work."
Kinney wondered if he should respond, but merely nodded to himself as the gate continued to grind. "So," he thought, "this is District HQ." He looked back to where Bader's broken body lay, somewhere back there, unrecovered.
"I wish you were here to see it,"